Moncrief on News Talk.
Declan Buckley and Miriam McAvoy are with us once again to solve all your problems. Good afternoon to you both. Is it still raining outside?
It's raining cats and dogs and everything else.
Right.
Can I ask, if we entered that competition and we won it, could we wouldn't be allowed, would we? We wouldn't be allowed
to. I would say
you where your mind works.
It would sound a bit dubious, probably, if you got the call.
Yeah.
And you could say, oh God, I was only in there yesterday.
Yeah.
But the good news is you say it every week and I don't remember it any ever time. I never remember the number you said. So
yeah, I probably couldn't remember it myself, actually,
exactly.
To be honest.
So no chance,
it's just
I'm
like
going to win it.
Pavlov's dog kind of thing. I just spout it out.
Hello.
Right, here's the first question. We bought in a new housing estate a few years ago. There is a house a few gardens down, but not on our road, with a child or stroke adolescent who has what appears to be additional needs. He spends hours of his day in the garden shouting and making loud one-off random noises. It's been like this since day one, and it's obviously outside his control. But we can clearly hear him in our garden and even indoors with windows closed. Initially, I bought noise-cancelling headphones and that worked. But now we have a new baby at home, so I can't be in a position where my hearing is blocked. The noises are also impossible to get used to because it changes constantly in pitch and content. Of late, the shouting has gotten worse and much, much louder. Recently, he spent from 2 p.m. until about 10:30 p.m. in the garden, screaming on a near constant basis, and started the next day at 10 a.m. until about 9 p.m. Some mornings, he might even be outside before 8 a.m., and he's been out on occasions well past 10, just shouting noises at the top of his voice. Essentially, there's no escape. I know this is not intentional. I know it's a tough situation for the parents, but it's absolutely chronic. He doesn't appear to be in school during the day, so it's 7 days a week now, and at times he plays music on a phone or a speaker to add to the soundscape. We don't know the parents, so we don't know whether they are oblivious to just how far the sound carries or whether they just don't care. My question then is, what can we do? I really don't want aggro of going round. As I said, I was happy to just get noise-cancelling headphones before and plough on, but now the situation has changed, and I find myself getting more and more bothered by the constant yelling over sustained hours while totally appreciating how tough it must be. If we were in a position to move, I'd be gone. Would an anonymous letter just asking for some proximity awareness work? Or would that end in a manhunt for the sender? How could you phrase it? I have visions of the estate Facebook page blowing up, but all I'm really looking for is some consideration that we live in a shared space and could use some respite from the noise. That's a tough one. That is a really tough one.
Very tough one. I mean, the first question that comes to my mind is, why is this person being left out there for such long periods of time? Are they not even called in for dinner? Do they eat? Why? I'm not judging anyone looking after them, but you still have a duty of care if they are your sibling or your child or whatever it may be. So in terms of what this person can do, I would contact maybe the social services to see if there's any it has to be investigated aside from it being...
It sounds a bit dubious, the setup at all.
It does. And that person could possibly get care, could possibly get some form of, I don't know, maybe in medical intervention that would help this or whatever. But it's certainly not going to improve anybody's life, particularly the person that's out, it's locked out. Well, not locked out, but seems to be locked out in the garden. So, I mean, I would say that kind of intervention is the best. It is extraordinary nobody else has said anything, though, to me.
Yes, that's the thing. I just wonder, do they know any other neighbours?
Yeah.
And, you know, could they say to those neighbours, do you hear this kid roaring all the time?
Yeah. Because, well, I mean, I think that they obviously do. One part of the letter earlier on that I noticed was when the letter writer here referred back to the original part about getting the earphones. And I don't know if I understood that properly, whether or not she had been speaking to somebody who was saying, this is a bit of a problem. And she said, I'm glad, I'll just have the earphones and I'll be fine for now. Was there somebody that spoke to them already about this whole situation? Because at the end of the day, you're dealing with a child or a young person who has, you know, whether it's they're on the autistic spectrum or whether there's some other form of learning, development or behavioural issue that means they have a setup, which may involve them choosing, wanting, insisting, demanding to be in that particular setup and having an environment of which they have control over,
right.
And that involves being out in the garden doing whatever they're doing, and then creating whatever noise, which then has a knock on effect of impacting on somebody else. The problem is that the other neighbours seem to not be aware, or else they're used to it. So I don't know how bad it is. Like, I'm not telling this person that they're imagining the situation, but it is one of those situations where often in neighborhood situations, the arrangement that you want can end up not being the arrangement that you get, and you end up having to kind of make a sort of a compromise when you've got a situation where there's somebody with particular needs or particular behaviours, because it can be people who have antisocial behaviours, or there's all kinds of dramatic reasons why neighbours fall out over noise. And I think for that situation, you would be surprised at how difficult it is to get kind of respite in some way. Because if the stuff hits the fan, you can end up in a situation where it just goes on and on and on and on and on. I think I feel really bad for the parents of this kid, because, I mean, you know, whatever that neighbour is listening to, they're listening to it as well. And I mean, maybe that's part of the issue.
Maybe that's why they're in the back garden.
Yeah. that's where it comes down to it, is that if there's no pushback or there's no comment from neighbours saying this is impacting me as well, maybe that the parents of this child are happy to go along with just putting the kid out at further arm's length. And that's the bit where you go, you might be able to have a conversation. I think it's more decent to have a conversation with the parents than to do kind of anonymous letters or
I think
that part is a bit insensitive.
If they went to say the services that would usually looked after somebody with these issues, and they had a report, like if there hasn't been, and I don't even mean to report them, just say I'm worried about this person's well-being. Now, if it may well be that somebody has said something and it has been investigated and it's okay, then unfortunately, this lady hasn't a leg to stand on, really. But I would do something like that. Or else talk. Now, you see, the other thing about living in suburbia or wherever in the state is that she could be the only person that's at home, aside from the carers for this parent. You know, two people working,
Would you make it an ideal scenario for the parents of that child and the worst scenario for her? So maybe she should move. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter whether that situation is impacting one person or 20 people is that, unfortunately, for the parents of that child, there's no escape. That child has a need. There is nowhere for that kid to go other than in a house in a field in the middle of nowhere. That kid's not there first either.
Though,
do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's kind of like I kind of you moved in there. It isn't meeting your requirements from a noise perspective, and that noise could be for any amount of reasons, which kind of flips around both ways. If it was somebody having late night parties, would you call around to the house? You probably would. And I just think that having the conversation with the source rather than reporting is a more neighbourly, it's more effective, it's more sensitive, and it's more likely for the conversation flow to be happening. Because the minute you go into authorities, you create different kind of issue.
They'll be wondering who
ratted me out.
I didn't see it so much as reporting as just seeing if there's someone that could help the situation. I suppose in the end it would end up being a report.
Yeah,
because
it's going to be somebody from there, tussling, knocking on your door. Yes. That's going to feel like you're ratted out.
That's true.
Whereas if somebody knocks on your door and says, "Hi, I'm Kathleen and I live up the road and I've taken my earphones off and I can't live here because of the noise from your kid at the back. I just want you to be aware that this is impacting on me as well. Is there anything that we could do?"
Yeah, I suppose it's finding that form of words.
Well, I would use those for that form of words.
That doesn't make it sound like a complaint.
An accusation.
Because you may well call around to this person's house and a woman answers the door who's utterly worn out.
Oh, absolutely.
And was going, "What do you want me to do? You know, you think it's bad for you. It's a nightmare for me. And maybe maybe this family just aren't getting the support. Obviously, they're not getting the supports they need, even a bit of respite.
Well, maybe that's where you go with the conversation with them, is that, you know, are you getting the supports that you need? Would it be helpful to you if I, as a neighbour, was to write in and talk about how this is impacting on our community as well? Do you think that would help you to get more help? And that way, then, you get to where you're suggesting, Mary, which is you're getting those other people involved. Yeah. You're not snitching in and, you know. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, like, there are certain disabilities and certain conditions are very difficult to manage. And they require a lot of resources, and you don't get to, you know, there's no fix. All you can do is respite or you get away from them.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a neighbour, I mean, the parents can't get away. And it's a really horrible situation. Yeah, I feel badly for both sides, because I know what it's like to live in a situation where, you know, there's noise and you're not getting the peace and quiet that you just want.
Yeah.
But as I said already, I also feel complete sympathy for the parents of the kids, because that's relentless for them.
Relentless.
Ongoing. Yeah. And zero respite.
Yeah. And just, but then I'm saying, aside from respite, would there be any kind of medical intervention where there would be something that could calm the person? Or, and I'm not saying drug the person.
No,
but I'm saying, do you know, like...
But it could be that the parents will say, this is, you know, Mary in her best scenario. This is when she's the calmest. Because if we take her out of that situation, it's 10 times worse.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe that's the compromise from the previous situation. Yeah. So, you know, because a lot of the behavioural stuff and the, you know, if it is a kid with autism or stimming or these kind of things, it's all about controlling the situation and being in that zone. And if you interfere with that, it can get much worse.
I think so.
I suppose that's about all the advice we can offer.
Maybe if you can talk to one of the neighbours and see if they have had any experience, or do they know any background or whatever. You could also do that. But then,
But I would find it very, very hard to believe that the parents of that child aren't 100% aware of the impact that's having on the immediate neighbourhood. Because, I mean, like, it's just they know. But they're like, you know, what can I do? How can we handle
this? Because
it couldn't work.
Love them.
Yeah, it's awful.
My mom died this time last year, but my dad has already met someone new, and I'm so upset. It is a lady who they both knew from the Bridge Club, and I feel that it's way too soon for this to be happening. I feel really betrayed by my dad, because I don't understand how you can just move on so quickly. My partner says he might just crave the company and I should be supportive. We are organising a mass and a way to mark our first anniversary, which is coming up. And now he wants to invite this new woman. How do I handle this? He doesn't get why I'm angry at him and says life is short and we need to be enjoying every moment.
Yeah, that's a really difficult one, because I can see both the rationale from both angles. I can see the rationale going, you know, my mother isn't gone that long. It feels really hurtful for you to be, quote fingers, replacing her really quickly. But on the other side of the thing, I do also see the perspective of life is short, and just because you're finding a way to meet some of your needs, it doesn't mean that your pain and your grief and your loss is gone away. So I do see it from both perspectives. I think that often there can be an intention to sweep things under the carpet. Yes. And I think that maybe is what she is feeling, that the dad's not kind of talking about, you know, and we don't know anything about the relationships of people and all that kind of stuff. So but I do believe that when it comes to something like a memorial for somebody, you know, a family memorial, I think everybody in the family's feelings have to be considered.
Yes.
Not just the husband of the, you know, the widow or the widower. I think that the children should be considered as well. I think that she's within her rights to say, I'd rather you didn't do that. I think that seems to be okay for me, particularly because it's so soon. Like, if it was 10 years or longer, I'd be like, you know, come on.
But,
Well, I suppose moving on is one thing, but inviting her to the...
That's what I'm saying,
Well, I think also it strikes me is that he is, I think, possibly avoiding the sorrow of losing his wife at all costs. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying that the relationship doesn't have merit or that it may not go somewhere, but because it's happened so quickly, I think it's like, you know, and also, you don't... If the woman... This sounds very... Oh, I don't know, emotionally cannibalistic or something. But supposing that this lady who died had a long illness. You
yes.
know, a lot of the time in those cases, and you know that that person is going to go, you do your mourning while they're alive, do you know? And
yes,
then
yes,
and they're gone.
Yeah. There's it's almost a relief
almost
there.
A relief. But yeah. we don't know that.
Yeah.
But I think really the as you said, both of you said, that the issue is not that it's happened so quickly or anything else. It is the going to the mass. I just think that is just a step too far.
Mm.
And yeah. I'm sure the lady, the new lady, wouldn't mind being asked to look. I'd say maybe she doesn't particularly want to go.
Yeah.
You know.
Why would you?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's. Very strange, you know.
It is. Your new mommy's here.
No, I think if let the new relationship be whatever it is, but I think just for this particular thing, I think he should not bring her to the he should be asked to consider his children and not to bring her to that. And then they can meet in the pub or something afterwards for a drink. It doesn't mean, you know, but it just, or to go, because she obviously knows that person. If they were in the bridge club, well, then she probably would go to the mass anyway. But the point is, don't go as this man's girlfriend or partner. Just to go in your private capacity.
Yes, and go with that. Sit with the rest of the bridge group.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard though, isn't it? People grieve in different ways, and for one person's grief to be so like, well, I want to sweep it under the carpet.
Yeah.
While another person wants it to be all out in the open, and you know, we're gonna do this kind of like Queen Victoria. We're gonna wear black for 10 years, and then you know, you're not allowed to see anybody during that. You know, you can't force somebody else to grieve the way that you think is appropriate. And that that basically boils down to the daughter and the father both recognising each other's positions may never kind of meet, but there has to be a way in individual situations like the mass, the memorial mass, just to find a compromise situation.
Yeah.
And that is like, you know, Maureen from the Bridge Club is down the back of the church, you know, and they can, you know, fine.
Just go with the bridge. I think that's perfect.
I think everybody needs
solution.
To be respectful about each other's.
And having said that, I mean, I'm sure there's lots of people who would text in or whatever and say, well, they remember somebody who met their next partner, like, you know, a very short time after. And I think I've known a few myself and it has been successful. But I just think that this particular mass, because I think it's the first, isn't it the first anniversary?
It's the first anniversary, yeah.
No, I think.
Yeah.
Come with the bridge club.
Life is very complicated. I think it's very, it's kind of delusional to think that people can't move on through life, doing things, going to work, you know, achieving things, doing fun stuff while simultaneously carrying the horror of an incredible loss with them.
Yeah.
And to kind of, you know, just because somebody isn't acting sad, you know, you can't punish them for feeling that way. Because I just think that's a bit, that's
wrong.
And also
there are people whose lives do stop. They literally stop when they lose their significant other and they don't do it.
Yeah.
And they're just a different person from then on in. And that's
there's
to
no
me
one
is
right
not,
way to grieve.
There's no one way to go. But I think life is for living also, but also with consideration for those around you who may be suffering for different reasons.
Okay, one last quick one. For my entire adult life, my friend has worked in finance. He's always complaining about his work. He constantly reminds us that he hates every aspect of the job. He's often talked about the work being soulless and how he wants a more meaningful job that he finds inspiring and that does some good in the world. Frequently, he will talk about how he would love to leave and do something really cool, but that he just can't get out of it. He has always made various excuses for why this is so. Money is tight. It's a job. It's a tough job market out there. Or this is all I know how to do. Stuff like that. As far as I'm concerned, that's all rubbish. I've always suspected that he finds the job easy and it pays well and it's as simple as that. Recently, he was let go and got a very substantial payout. He's already a very well-off man. Myself and the rest of our friends thought, great, this will give him the push he needs to explore different alternatives. Not only has he not done that, he's basically done nothing for a month. And is now looking for another job in finance. I don't care what job he has, to be honest, but I do want him to be happy and to stop fishing for sympathy among his substantially poorer friends. Now, you'll notice, listeners, that there wasn't a question in there at all. Somebody just wrote in to give out about their friend.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say.
This
what
man is as happy as a lamb giving out. He loves it. He loves giving out. And if he was let go, he had no intention of leaving that job. He has no intention of going off and being a painter in the South Seas or anything like that. He's as happy as Larry giving out. So leave him give out or don't listen to him. That's what
absolutely.
I would say.
But also the guy who wrote the letter in is happy, you know, to
give out.
And to also kind of, I mean, the reality of it is if if we dumped all of our friends because they weren't entirely honest about how they felt about a situation, whether it's about a partner, whether it's, you know, a job or whatever other thing, we'd have no friends because, you know, we're not particularly consistent. Sometimes we kind of, you know, I'd love to, you know, blah, 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 or I'm going to do this and we just don't. So from that point of view, I don't see what the actual issue is other than somebody saying, I have a dream one day. I'm going to get a fishing boat and I'm going to go off into the Atlantic Ocean and that day will never come. But I'll talk about it as a dream because you got to have dreams, right? In the meantime, I'm working for KPMG or Accenture and I'm raking in loads of money and I've got loads more money than you and you're raging because I haven't done my dreams. And you're like, come on.
It's not what it is. Yeah. But it comes out, he wants to do some good in the world. Yeah. But when it comes down to the balance between which do I like more, money or doing some good in the world? Yeah. Well, there's your answer.
I know a person, I won't even say because just in case they're listening, but for the last 5 years, they've been saying they're going to do something, right?
Yeah.
Every single time I ask them about it, I get the same answer. Oh, yeah, next week we're going to get a new auctioneer and that's going to happen. And we're going to be, I go, oh, you know, so I mean, but and then they go off and forget about it.
Yeah.
They go off and forget about it. So I wouldn't worry about him and just let him off. The next time you meet him and he starts going on, just tell him to shut up.
Yeah.
But just keep listening to him.
I'd also suggest that he practically does have a career in the arts, because there's one thing that somebody has who works in the arts is procrastination. That's one of the key qualities to work in the arts. So he practically, he could say he was an actor or a writer or whatever, because, you know, sitting there not doing what he's supposed to be doing.
That's good, write a novel.
That's half the job.
Playing the part of a victim. He's doing that very well. Mary and Declan, thank you both very much. If you have a question for the slot, afternoon@newstalk.com is where to send it into.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.